All right, we'll start here two lines from the bottom of Lamechedem and Bet. Kama machilin otov, how much do you have to feed him? Meaning that this process by which we determine whether it's a mum kavur or not, how much of this material do you have to give to him? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishnah Rabbi Pinchas ben Aruva kigru goret, as for the size of a fig. Amar Rova, baime marova, in Eretz Yisrael they ask about this, kigru goret besuda rishona. Do you need to have a gugurit just in the first meal of the day? Or is it every meal of the day? If you say in the end, it is bisuda rishona, so you can see here, the Rambam Lashitoto says if the Gemara does imtim salomar, it means the Gemara has concluded now that it's really bisuda rishona that you have to do this. Is it kodem achila or the achar achila? Is it before it eats or after it eats? Kodem achila vadi malile. So the Gemara says for sure, if you eat it before the meal, that should definitely help it. Kasama. Is there any other medicinal cure that you would take? It's better to take it before you eat. That's when most people would take their medicine before they eat. L'achar achila mai. After you eat, what's the story? Kodem shtia or l'achar shtia? Is it before you drink or after you drink? Kodem shvida k'vadai malile. Before you drink, it's definitely good. Kisare. Like the way that the animal eats its barley. The achar shtia mai. After it's already drank, what's the story? Kashur or mutar? Is it tied up, bundled, or is it released? Mutar vadei malile. When it's already spread out and open, it's easy for it to eat, easy to get to it. That definitely helps. Kashur mai. If it's tied up or still bundled, does that work? Livado o im chaveiro. Is it eating alone, or is it eating with the companion? Im chaveiro vadei malile. But then a companion, the animal's calmer, it is something that helps it to feel better about its eating. That's definitely effective. Levado, my, alone, what's the story? Be'ir, o basadeh, in the city, meaning where the people live, or basadeh, out in the fields. Basadeh, vadeh, malileh, out in the fields, it's clearly beneficial for it because there's lots of air, it feels at home, it feels at ease. Be'ir, my, in the city, how does the animal deal with that? By Ravashi, imtim salomar bisadeh. If you say that out in the field is beneficial or the right place to be, ginas mukhalir mai. When you have a garden that's near the city, what's the din there? Teiku. And all of these are left somewhat unresolved. Some of them the Gemara gave indications of what they think would be the better way. The others we don't know. And then this also with regards to the ginas mukhalir, whether it's more like the ear or more like the sadeh, the Gemara leaves as an unresolved issue. Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus somer. So in our Mishnah, Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus mentions that bodkim oto gimel pa'amim betoch 80 yom. You check it 3 times within 80 days. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak uvad shehei mishulashim. As long as they are in thirds. Now, this is a difficult issue as to what does that mean. Tosafot over here spends time going through a number of different permutations of what it can mean, Mishulashim. He brings one interpretation of Rashi with regards to the Arei Miklat. What the requirement is, Gemara in Makot says also that they should be Mishulashim, that they should be equally set up. So Rashi over there explains, and Tosafot thinks this is the right explanation over there, that one in Mishulashim by the Arei Miklat means that they divide the country up into 4 quadrants. And then each of the Arei Miklat is at the point of one of those quadrants. So from, say, the top of Eretz Yisrael to the first quadrant, that's where the first Arei Miklat is. Then to the second quadrant, that's where the second Arei Miklat is. To the third quadrant, that's where the third Arei Miklat is. And then the last quadrant goes to the bottom of Eretz Yisrael. It means that equal distance between the top of Eretz Yisrael to the first Arei Miklat, from that Arei Miklat to the next one, to the next one, to the third, and then from the third to the end of the Aretz. But that really means that they're divided into 4, and then they're placed evenly in thirds along the way. Tosafot says he thinks that Rashi's explanation there is correct, but it's clearly not the explanation here. The reason it can't be the explanation here is he doesn't mention this, but it's because, logically, you're trying to determine whether something's been there over a duration of time. So you need to look at it at the moment, the first time, and you have to look at it the last time. There's no question that you need to be able to see this, just like when you do B'dikot, for Marot Dam, for all sorts of things, you need to have demarcations that say a start and an end. So over here, it can't be like what Rashi says over there by Makot, that we wait a certain amount of time, and then you do it next, and then next, next. In that case, you would do it at the 20th, 40th, and 60th day over here. That's when you would do the checks. But then you're missing the starting point, and the 80th day, which is the end point. That clearly cannot be the explanation over here. So there are two other possibilities as to what the explanation is over here. Tosafot thinks that it means that you do it on the first day, meaning the first time you notice it, the first time you see it. You do it 40 days later, which would be the middle. And then you do it on the 80th day, which is the last day. So that's how Tosafot says Mishulashim is literally thirds, but there's only one of them that's really in the middle, the other two at the end points, one at the beginning, one at the end. So that's Tosafot. Rashi, on the other hand, and the Rambam follows in a similar, the Rambam says something similar, says that when you notice it, there's no bedikah. That's the first time you've seen it. Then you need to make the check subsequently to see whether that's the case. And that is Mishulashim. And Rashi gives you the numbers, 20 and 6 and a half days. It's 26 and a two-thirds days, really should be. But he has 26 and a half days later, you check the first time. Another 26 and a half days later, you check the second time, which would be 53 days in. And then 27 days later, which would be the last check. If you did 26 and a two-thirds, it would work out. So Rashi says, at the beginning, there's no check, because that's when you noticed it. Then you have three checks subsequent to that. You break it up into thirds. Tosafot says, the first time you notice it, that is the first check. And that's what it means, Mishulashim. So those are three different ways to explain Mishulashim. Again, Tosafot's point with regards to the one that Rashi explains about Makot is clearly not the case over here. Question is, does Mishulashim mean beginning, end, and middle? Or does it mean from the time you notice it, thirds for the remaining time that you have? And that's why Rashi explains it. Now, boy, mine Pinchas achua demar Shmuel mishmuel. So Pinchas, Shmuel's brother, asked of Shmuel, achal v'lo itse, if he eats the curative item that we have discussed all along, what he needs to eat in order for this to remove this mum, and if it doesn't successfully remove the mum, that's an indication that it is a mum kavua. So this animal ate the medicinal cure, but it did not cure it. Lema freya bimuma, omikana laba bimuma. Retroactively, does that establish that this is a mum kavua, or does this establish it as a mum kavua prospectively? Or in essence, the question is, was it a mum kavua? We just didn't realize it. So once we've tested, now we realize that it was a mum kavua all along. Or does the test establish that it is a mum kavua, and therefore only prospectively would it be a mum kavua? L'may nafkamina, why does it matter? The mem'al bipidyono. To have mi'ilah with regards to its redemption. So as Rashi points out here, we're clearly not speaking about a bechor. A bechor doesn't have pidyon. So you have to be speaking about other kodoshim, sulei amukdashim. But if you redeemed it, person went ahead and said, there's a mum kavua here, I'm going to redeem the animal based on that mum kavua. Now, we go 80 days later, and we realize that it was a mum kavua. But if it's prospective, the mum kavua, then whatever he did earlier on has no bearing, because it wasn't ready to be redeemed at that point. It wasn't declared a mum kavua yet. Now, prospectively, he can redeem it. Whether it works or doesn't work is a good question, because he did the redemption before. It should be as if there is no redemption at all. It shouldn't have worked at all. Or maybe he said, whenever it is a mum kavua, it will work, but that means that there was a delayed implementation of it. If you believe that the mafreya makes into a mum kavua, his pidyon was successful. That means in the interim, if you use the money, you're a moel, misappropriated those monies, you're going to be chayav and mi'ilah. Yamar the mafreya v'muma moel. If you say it works retroactively, then if you misappropriated those monies in the interim, then you are moel in those monies. Even kind of the haba v'muma lo moel. If it's prospective, then what you did before was not effective. That means that the monies here are not monies of Hekdesh, and you weren't moel in them. My, what's the din? Kari Shmuel Ale. Shmuel says about his brother, Pischim Bazuzu Baz. The ones that were lame, they were unable to walk properly. Sometimes they managed to take some of the booty. Or this is the same as the expression that a broken clock is right twice a day. It's the idea that there are times when the unusual happens. And the way that Rashi explains it over here is, Kloma ata incha mechudad. You're not such a sharp tack. B'sha'alta she'la kazu, she'ni yodei tshuva. And you asked a really good question that I don't know the answer to. So from Rashi, it sounds like it's a little bit of a put down, a ganai towards Pinchas, which is, normally you're not so sharp, You don't really ask these great questions, and this time you stumped me. That's the way that Rashi reads it. Or I think that there are those that try to read it in a more positive light, which is Kari Leishmo Pischim Bazubaz. It's not something to say that not ra'oi, not good, but there's sometimes where you have these great questions that I can't answer. Generally, I can respond to those answers. Rather, it's about Shmuel speaking about himself rather than speaking about his brother's lack of sharpness. He's speaking about his inability to answer. Generally, I can answer, but over here, I can't answer. One of those rare moments where I can't really answer the question. And then it would be less negative towards his brother, but more about Shmuel's ability to answer over here. All right, next Mishnah. Chotmo shenikev. If his nose was perforated, vishenifgam, or it was cut, vishenistak, or was slit, svamo, that's the girsa that we have here, but the girsa in the Mishnayot is svato, which would seem from the Gemara to be the right girsa. Svamo would be the area of the mustache, svato would be the lip. Shenikva, that was perforated, shenifgama, that was cut, or shenistaka, that was slit, all these are considered to be mumim. Tan Rabbanan, nikvo chotmim ze l'toch ze. If the nose is perforated one into the other, mi b'chutz, on the outside, harize mum, that's problematic. Mi b'fnim, if it's internal, einu mum. So now, the way that Rashi reads it, is all likelihood, the word mi b'chutz can't say before it ze l'toch ze. Because, according to Rashi, the difference in the perforations are, we're talking about the outer part of the nose, or you're talking about the internal septum in the nose. And so mibifnim is the septum that's punctured one into the other. That's not a mum. If you puncture the outer part of the nose, that's considered to be a mum. So zelatok zeh cannot be relevant when you're talking about bachutz. Bachutz, that's the whole point. It's not zelatok zeh. In the septum, then it is zelatok zeh. So Rashi probably does not have the girsa of zelatok zeh with regards to the first statement of the Gemara. It's just a question of the perspirations on the outer part of the nose or on the internal part of the nose, and that would make the difference. The Rambam, on the other hand, says, mibifnim mibachutz has to do where along the nose that it happens. The septum of the nose, generally of the animal, extends down further than the outer sides of the nose. In human beings, it's about flattish, although the septum comes down a drop more. In animals, the septum drops even further down. So now, mibachutz means if there's a perforation outside the area that's covered by the two outer parts of the nose. The other one, mibifnim, is if it's in the area that is covered by the outer parts of the nose. So mi b'chutz, if the hole happens in the septum that's below the area of the outer part of the nose, that would be problematic. Mi b'chutz, that's outside the nose. Whereas if the puncture or perforation is in the septum inside the nose, that would not be problematic. And then according to Rambam, you could read ze l'toch ze in both of them. In both of them, the puncture or the perforation is in the septum. It's just how far down the septum is, whether it's outside the nose or internal to the nose. Svato, shenikva, v'shenif gema, v'shenistaka. So over here already in the Gemara, you see that it's svato and not svamo. Amra papa, Torah bara desiftei. It is the outer edge of the lip that we're speaking about. And that's why in all likelihood, even if you say it's speaking about safam is the word that's used there, it doesn't mean the area of the mustache. It means the outer edge. The outer edge would be where the lip is. And that's the same thing over here. So it means the outer edge of the lip, the visible part of the lip, even when the mouth is closed, that's the piece that we're speaking about, that if it has any of these problems, that it is considered to be a mum. And again, we spoke about in the first Mishnah, the difference between nekev, pagam, and nizdak, where nekev is a perforation, a hole, that sometimes has requirements of size. Nifgam means it's cut, but not all the way through. Nizdak means like a slit, where it's from edge to edge, it's gone all the way through. Right, Mishnah. This Mishnah we've already mentioned twice before in the Masechta, and there is a machloket, again, as to how to explain it. Chutim achitzonot. So the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom, back on Daf Lamed Hey, explained it is that the chutim achitzonot are the incisors, the outer teeth. Shenifgimu, that were cracked. Oshenigmimu, or were shaved down. So those teeth, if they are visible when the animal is eating, they're very easily seen. Those type of mumim are considered to be mumim shibigaluy because they're on the front teeth, which are easily seen to you. And therefore, if they have these mumim, they're considered to be a mum. Hapnimim, the molars, which are internal, then if it were nifgamu, nigmimu, it would not be noticeable or easily discerned. It's only shenekru. If they're completely missing, then you would notice it. And we saw earlier in the Gemara, that is because when the animal bleats, moves, or calls out, it opens its mouth wide, and over there you're able to see the molars that are there, and if they're absent or they're undone, then you would notice it. If there was a small crack in them or they were shaved down a little bit, you wouldn't be able to tell because they're far back in the mouth. That's the way the Rabbeinu Gershom explains this about the chutim ha-chitzunot and the chutim ha-bnimiyim. The other hand, Rashi seems to explain back on Lamed Hei and other places in Shas, he seems to indicate that speaking about the gums. He's speaking about the outer gums and the inner gums, which means that the gums that are towards the front of the mouth, which is that they're cut or they are shaved down. Hapnimim are the gums in the back and nekru. They have to be undone completely, unbruited in order for you to notice it. That's the way Rashi explains it. It could be that Rashi is referencing not to the gums where the incisors and the molars are, rather the area of the gums that sits in between them, which is there's a gap in the mouth of many of the kosher animals between the incisors where they only have teeth on the upper half or the lower half, and then the molars in the back, there's a area of gum that exists over there. That could be where Rashi is referring to the front of that gum and the back of that gum. That could be what he's referencing to. The Rambam, on the other hand, speaks in the Perush Mishnayot about chutim, like pieces or strands that come along with the tongue. These two string-like flesh pieces that are in the base of the palate that the Rambam describes as two of them being towards the front of the mouth and two of them being back towards the trachea, less visible. And it's speaking about where along that is it pnimim or chitzunim to determine whether it has to be nekar or simply nifgam or nigmema. Right, so those are three different explanations. We've discussed many times Rashi and the Rabbeinu Gershom's difference between whether he's speaking about the gums or the teeth. Chanina ben Antigonus Omer, en bokim min tiyomet ulifnim. You don't check from, now tiyomet is, for instance, used by lulav, that the tiyomet is where you have a double, something that is a pair. So we don't check from the pair and inward, v'af lo et tiyomet, and not the tiyomet itself. In all likelihood, what he's referring to are the molars. The incisors are a tooth that has one edge to them. When you get to the molars, it's really, it looks like or it consists of two teeth. There's two sharp points and there's a groove in the middle. So tiomet are likely the molars. And that's what he's saying over here, that you don't check from the tiomet, from the molars and back, and not the molars themselves, because that's already too far back in the mouth, where it's no longer considered to be a mumshig begalui. So for Rashi, that means if the gums are removed at that point, it's no longer meaningful. It's just too far back in the mouth. And that goes to what I said before, that maybe Rashi, when he's speaking about the gums, speaking about the area between the incisors and the molars themselves, because that's an area where there's just plain gums. And that seems to be what maybe Chanina ben Antigonus is mentioning over here. Or, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom's view, then the molars in the back, that's not relevant, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus, because those are just too far back, and even if they were taken out, you really wouldn't notice whether they were there or they weren't there. Tarabanan, hatiyomet, probably a problem in the gears to hear, it probably should be ezehi hatiyomet, min hatiyomet vilifnim, vitimiyomet atzma kilifnim. The tiyomet itself is like that which is inside of it. Yeshua ben, we had this earlier in the Masechta, and over there his name was Kapusai with a samach, not a tzadi. So the gears, according to the Shid Mugas, has changed to ben Kapusai. Omer ein shochtim ela achitzonot bilvad. You only checked on the outer ones. Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus Omer im hashgichim al tiyomet kol ikar. We don't worry about the molars at all. My kamar, what is going on here? You have a three-way machloket. It's not really clear what they're discussing. Vitu, Rabbi Shua ben Kapusai hainu tanakama. That Rabbi Shua ben Kapusai seems to be saying the same thing as the tanakama, which is ein shochtim ela achitzonot bilvad. He says you only checked on the outer ones, and the Tanakhama says from the tiyomet and the tiyomet itself inward are all the same thing. Seemingly saying that none of those matter, like Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus, and then that's exactly what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Kapusai is saying. Gemara says, Chasurei Mechzera. There are a bunch of transition phrases that are missing from the Braita. This is what it means. Ezehu apnimit what is considered to be the inner part? The Mishnah divides between the outer ones and the inner ones. What is the definition of the inner ones? Mina tiyomet, vilifnim. From the tiyomet and inward, that is pnim. Va tiyomet atzma, kilifnim. And tiyomet itself is considered kilifnim. Bame dvarim amurim. What is that meaningful? Shenifkimu v'nigmimu. That's only the case if they were chipped, cracked, or shaven down. Avon that crew, if they were uprooted, shochatin. Then even on that, you can be shochet. In essence, what you have here is the Tanakama of our Mishnah. Now the Tanakama of the Bright are saying the same thing, which is that the front teeth have a lower threshold, which is cracking or shaved down, or the gums, according to Rashi. The inner ones have a higher threshold, which is they have to be nekru. They have to be uprooted completely in order for them to be a mum. And now the Tanakama is saying the same thing. Along comes Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai. Romer, ain't shochatim, ela chitzonot. You only shecht on the outer ones. Aval pnimiyot shenekru, mishkat alayu lo shechtinan, aval avsule mifsal. The inner ones, they are not sufficient to allow you to shecht a bechor, but they are sufficient to render it unworthy to be placed on the Mizbeach. You can no longer put them on the Mizbeach because they're disqualified from the Mizbeach, but they're not sufficiently with a mum that would then allow you to shecht the Bechor without waiting for another mum. So it has this kind of quasi-status, like a ben hashmashot status, which doesn't allow you to put on the Mizbeach, but it's not sufficient to allow you to shecht it. It's left in limbo. Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus Omer, ein mashkichim al tiyomet kol ikar. We don't care about the tiyomet at all, and it doesn't even render it unworthy to be placed on the Mizbeach. Meaning that that area has no bearing whatsoever. That means it's not a mum to disqualify it from the Mizbeach. It's not a mum to shecht on it. It's not anything. We don't look at it. We don't pay attention to it at all. And that way you have a three-way machloket as to what you do in this situation with regards to the inner parts of the gums or the inner teeth, depending on which interpretation of our Mishnah you subscribe to. Bai Rava Chodvai Bar Ami. Yesh Mechuser Eivra Mibifnim. Oin Mechuser Eivra Mibifnim. We're speaking about a mum. Does a mum where you're missing a limb that is internal, is that a sufficient type of mum? Lemai, what issue are you discussing here where you want this to be relevant? Ila Bechor, if you're speaking about a Bechor, Piseach O Iver Ktiv. We already saw in Parshat Re'ei, it says the type of mum that you need is a pisiach o iver, and those are both types of things that are visible and external. So then, what's the question over here? There's no internal type of mum that you would speak about. Ilu kodoshim, if you're speaking about kodoshim in Parshat Temor, it says, averet o shavur, ktiv. Also again, these are items that are external and visible. It's not speaking about internal type of mumim. So Gemara says, not asking about shechting it, which would be the case by a bechor that has a moment it will let you shecht it, to redeem it, which would be the case by other psulei amuktashim, if it had a mum, you would redeem it, that we're not asking about. The only thing I'm asking about, can we disqualify it from the mizbeach? My, what's the din? So again, it's speaking about this possible limbo state that you would put the animal in, in which it would be disqualified from the Mizbeach, but it would not be sufficient to allow you to redeem the animal in the case of Suleim Muktashim, or it would not be sufficient to shecht the animal if it was a Bechor. But it would be a sufficient reason to disqualify it from the Mizbeach. The question is, the Pasuk says, Tamim Iyel Ratzon Amar Rachmana, Tamim In Chisaron Lo, meaning that it has to be whole, not missing anything. That's it. If it's missing something, it's not Tamim. Oh, Dilma. Or maybe we look at it as Tamim Yeh L'Ratzon, Kol Mum Lo Yevo, the juxtaposition of these two items, makes it that Ma Mum Me'evrai, Af Chisaron Me'evrai. The Tamim, which means that the animal must be whole, and the Mum are juxtaposed, and so just like Mum is only relevant when it's external and visible, maybe so too, Chisaron. It's not Tamim. Tamim means to be whole. A lack of Tmimut would be a disqualifying item, but that would only be similar to a mum. And just like a mum is only a mum when it's external and visible, so too a chisaron would only be relevant when it was external. Tashma, let us learn from the pasuk in Vayikra Zayin, Vechtea klayot, which are the items that you need to remove from the animal to be placed on the mizbeach, the internal parts of the animal. There it mentions vechtea klayot. And the diak obviously would be out of vechtea klayot. Why can't you just write et klayot? Why does he have to write shtea klayot? Because if every animal always has two, then by definition et klayot would be two. The fact that it mentions that shtea klayot seems to indicate that there's something special about two kidneys. Velo bal kuyachat, velo bal shlalosh. And it seems to imply that only if it has two kidneys, not if it has a single kidney, not if it has three kidneys. V'tani idach, we also have another brayta that says, yisirena, it says, v'tkol chelbo yakriv mimenu et alya, v'tachelev mechaseta kerev, v'et shtea klayot, v'tachelev asher leyen, asher laksalim, v'te yoteret ala kaved, ala klayot yisirena. So in the pasuk, klayot are mentioned twice. Et shtea klayot, and then ala klayot yisirena. You shall remove them. Rabot kulyachat. And here it seems to be the deal goes out of the word yisirena, which is somewhat in the singular form, and therefore indicates that even a single kidney would be okay or sufficient in this case. So now one brayta seems to indicate that two kidneys are necessary for it to be a proper korban. The other brayta seems to indicate even one kidney would be sufficient. Savrua, the Gemara says, we thought to say, the kuliyama ain't birya ba'akat. There is no such thing as an animal that is born with a single kidney. So then, da mixar chosir. And therefore, it is missing. Or the way that Rashi says it, the fact that it's never born with a single kidney means that if I'm looking at a single kidney now, one of the kidneys disappeared. Something happened after birth that caused one of the kidneys to disappear. And lema b'hakam iflege. And therefore the machloket between the brayta would be the following. The mar sabar chisaron bibifnim shmei chisaron. The first brayta says that an internal problem like that is problematic and would disqualify it. Whereas the mar sabar chisaron bibifnim lo shmei chisaron. And the brayta that says it's okay is the one who says that an internal missing limb is not disqualifying. It still qualifies to be tamim yelaratzon. Amar Rav Chir Bar Yosef, why do you have to say that? And obviously when the Gemara starts out Savrua, we thought to say, or it's logical to say, that means that the Gemara is making assumptions here, and the Gemara already declared to you what the assumption is. So now what Rav Chir Bar Yosef is going to do is make the machloket exactly about that point. The Kuliyama Yesh Birya Ba'achat, the Chisaron Mibifnim Shmei Chisaron. Everybody agrees that there is a concept or a possibility of an animal being born with a single kidney, and v'chizaron mibifnim shmei chizaron. If it's missing internally, then it's missing. V'lo kasha. Kan kishnivra b'shtaim v'chasro. The case where the first brayta is speaking about it being disqualifying is when it was born with two kidneys, and now it has one kidney. In that case, it'd be problematic. Kan kishnivra b'achat mi'ikara. And the second brayta is where it was congenitally born with a single kidney. That would then be something that's not disqualifying because that's the way the animal was created. Where it says, how can you make a statement like that? Ba dumya de shalosh ktoni. The first brayta said if it had one kidney or three kidneys. And you're telling me that the first brayta is a case where it was born with normally with two kidneys and now it has one kidney. Well, that works well when you're speaking about one kidney. When you're speaking about three kidneys, the animal's not born with two and then grows a third kidney. It was either born with three kidneys or it's not born with three kidneys. And therefore, your explanation here doesn't make sense. Ma shalosh mi'ikara. So that first brayta, just like shalosh is a congenital problem, afachat mi'ikara. So too, the one must be a congenital problem. And you just explained to me the first brayta was a case where it was born normally and then lost a kidney. That can't be the case because then the two parallel situations don't make sense. Elo ocha. Here's a case. V'yesh birya mi'ikara kamiflege. Question is, can you have an animal born with a single kidney? The second brayta holds that there is a concept of an animal being born with a single kidney. That's why it's not disqualifying. Mar sabar ein birya ba'achat. One holds, and as Rashi says over here, mar de pasil. The one who thinks it's pasul, the first brayta thinks, ein birya ba'achat. There's no such thing as an animal born with a single kidney. And therefore, if you have a single kidney, disqualified. Now Rashi over here says, well, if you can't have an animal born with a single kidney, that implies that the case in the first brayta is a case where it's born with two and lost one. Well, then you're back to the question we just had before. The first breita said one kidney or three kidneys. Three kidneys is certainly a case where it's born like that. So why doesn't the Gemara ask that question again? So Rashi raises that issue, and he says, "Bistapek le lemori." My teachers were perplexed by this. Amaylo makshi le nami dumi d'shalosh. Why doesn't the Gemara then ask again? You're now telling me that the first breita is a case where it's impossible to be born with one kidney, and therefore it must be a case where it was two kidneys and one was missing now. So if that's the case, how does that work with shalosh? He says, "Lo kashamide." Rashi says, "I'm not bothered by that." What Rashi points out is that the Gemara's assumptions have changed, and that change in assumption makes it that the question is no longer relevant. In the situation where we believe that you can have an animal born with a single kidney, then it makes sense to say that that first breita that has three in it, one and three should be similar because one should be from birth, just like three is from birth. You should create a parallel situation. But now we've already dismissed that possibility. And according to the way that we're explaining it now, there is no such thing as an animal born with a single kidney. If there's no such concept, then obviously it's not parallel to the case of three. Because you can't have that situation. You can't have that situation, then there are two cases in the breakup. There's a single kidney case, which is clearly something that happened after the fact. And then there's a three kidney case, which clearly happened congenitally and happened at birth. And so there, the question doesn't exist. The parallel cases aren't possible over here. That's why it's clearly two different issues. When there's a possibility of a parallel case, where before we said, oh yes, there's a possibility of an animal with one kidney, we're just going to explain this breita as being the one where it wasn't born like that, and the other one in the case where it was born, that doesn't make sense, because then you could have paralleled the three and the one, and that's why the Gemara asked the question before, but does not ask it now. It's interesting the way phraseology in Rashi, which you don't see so often, where he says, my Rebbeim had this question, and I'm not bothered by this question because of the way that I explained it. Rashi's explanation of Ein Birya Ba'achat, there's no such thing as a single-kidneyed animal, means it's impossible. It just won't happen. Others try to explain that it doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. It just means, how do we view an animal with a single kidney? Do we view it always as being a chisaron? Or do we view it as being okay? But if you believe it's always a chisaron, then Rashi's question kind of falls away because it is a case where the animal was created or born with a single kidney, just like it was born with three. But the single kidney, we don't view as being a congenital thing that is okay. We view it as being a chisaron mi'ikara, that there's like as if it's missing from the outset, and it is problematic, and that's what it means, ein birya ba'achat. Rav Yochanan amar, tukuli ama, ein birya ba'achat. There's no such thing as an animal born with a single kidney. The chisaron mi'bifnim, shmei chisaron. And an internal lacking is a problem. So now that should be a problem here because now you're saying to me, nobody's born with a single kidney. That means everyone was born with two. And if I had one there, one was lost already. If one's lost and you tell me that a chisaron b'fim is a problem, then how does the breita say that it's okay? Well, kasha, kan shechisra kodem shkita, kan shechisra lachar shkita. Depends when it lost the kidney. Lost the kidney before shkita, then it's a problem. Then it's disqualifying. If it lost the kidney after the shkita, then it's not disqualifying. It says, if that happened after Shechita, before Kabbalat Adam, is that okay? Someone who cuts a damages the ear of a par, and then does Kabbalat Adam, it's pasul. Obviously this happened post Shechita, pre Kabbalat Adam. We have a drasha that vakach midam apar, which we learned in Zvachim, means you take it from the pre-existing par. Pre-existing par was shalem at the time of shechita, absent the shechita, and therefore so too by the kabbalat adam, the entire animal b'shalem uto needs to be there at this point in time. And if you cut the ear in between, it's going to be problematic. And similarly, if it loses a kidney between the time of shechita and the time of kabbalat adam, that would be a disqualifying event. Ella. Kan shechisra kodem kabbalah, kan shechisra lachar kabbalah. It's a difference between whether it lost the kidney before kabbalat adam, which would be a disqualifying event, versus it lost the kidney after kabbalat adam, which would not be a disqualifying event. It says, u'lachar kabbalah kodem zvika mishari. Wait a minute. Before zvika adam, is it okay to have this happen, this chisaron happen? Vatanyo, don't we have a breita? Se tamim zachar ben shana yelechem. Regards to the Korban of Pesach, giving the description of what are the qualifications It has to be a seh, has to be from the family of the sheep or the goats, the flock animals. Tamim, it has to be without a mum. Zachar ben Shana, it has to be male in its first year of life. That's what you bring the Korban Pesach from. Seh Tamim comes immediately after the Pasuk by the Korban Pesach, Tachosu ala Seh, which is a reference to the Shechita. Sheh Tamim ben Shana b'shat Shechita. It has to be a Tamim and a ben Shana at the time you shecht it. Uminayin b'kabalah b'lochav azaya. How do you know that all those qualifications need to still exist at the time of Kabbalat Adam, Holachat Adam, receiving of the blood in the receptacle, the taking of the blood to the Mizbeach, Azayah, and sprinkling of the blood on the Mizbeach? How do I know that all these things have to be true? Now obviously, if it's a Seh or a Zachar at the time of Shechita, it's still a Seh or a Zachar at the time of Kabbalah, Holachat, and Azayah. That's not a question. The only thing that could change between the time of Shechita and the time of Azayah is whether it is a Tamim or whether it is a Ben Shana. That's what the Brayta is addressing. How do I know that it has to have the same qualifications all the way through the processing of the animal? Tamalomar, yeah. Shiyeh kol habayotav tamu ben shana. And so you see from that, that everything done to the animal from Shechita and onwards has to be under that qualification. If that's the case, then you have to be tam, not only from Shechita and Kabbalah, you need to have it for Olacha and Zrika as well. So how do you have this chisaron that happens post the Kabbalat Adam? That's okay. Targuma ben shana. That the Braita is really only speaking of Ben Shana and about, not about the Tamim part. And the Pasuk is also Meduyak because the word Iyeh appears in the Pasuk juxtaposed to Zachar Ben Shana. So the Iyeh, Bab Yato Yehei, is right next to Ben Shana, and that's the thing that needs to be true from the beginning to the end of the process, which is the drush of Iyeh, Bab Yato, that it should remain in that status or that state throughout the process. So the Tanya, Rabbi Shua Mer, Kol Zvachim Shebet Torah, any korban that has remaining of it, a kazayat basar, which is ro'oy la'achilat adam, or a kazayat chelev, which is ro'oy la'achilat mizbeach, zorek et adam. Then you have a right to do zrikat adam, so that's supportive of this idea that chisaron is certainly not a disqualifying event at a certain point. Because over here, there's no greater chisaron than the whole animal being missing except the kazayat basar, kazayat chelev. And yet we still allow you to do Zrikat Adam. The reason that you need at least a Kazayit Basar or Kazayit Chelev is because it says in the Pasuk in Parshat Re'ei, Basita Olotecha Basar Ba'adam. The Basar and the Dam are essential to the doing of the Korban in Basar and Dam. If you don't have Basar, then you don't have Dam. That's why you need a minimum of a Kazayit Basar to be left in order to process the animal. But that is also supportive of our contention here that that's all you need is the Kazayit Basar. Anything else missing, ruined, or anything like that will not disqualify the animal. So there it seems to be conclusive that the only thing that matters at Holacha and Zrikat Adam is the Ben Shana. As Rashi already notes, the Tamim part will apply by Shechita and Kabbalah, because that we have from Likach Midam Apar, Midam Par Sheh Hayakvar. So as far as Tamim or Mumim are considered, the animal must be whole at the time of Shechita and the time of Kabbalat Adam. After that point in time, it doesn't matter. That's why we said, up to Kabbalah, you have a requirement of the animal being Tamim. After that point, you don't need Tamim, you just need a Kazayit Basar, Kazayit Chelev to be left over. And therefore, you can explain the bright thought as being pre-Kabbalat Adam, it lost it, or post-Kabbalat Adam, it lost it. If it was pre-Kabbalat Adam, it disqualifies the animal. If it was post-Kabbalat Adam, it has no bearing on the animal, and that would be the difference in the bright thought. Regards to Ben Shana, it must be within its first year of life, from the time of Shechita all the way through the end of that process of Hazayat Adam. And that obviously raises the question as to how does it change its age in the middle of the process. And the Gemara says, Umi ike midei b'shat Shechita b'ben shana, b'shat Kabbalah b'olacha b'ben shtei shanim. How did it change its age between the time of Shechita and the time of Zrikat Adam? Amarava zot omeret, we've seen this before, sha'ot poslot b'kodeshim. That age by Kodeshim is determined not only by the day, but by the hour. It's hour to hour. As Rashi gives the example, if it was born on the 14th of Nisan in the previous year, 8 hours into the day, then if in the subsequent year you shechted it in the Bener Abayim, and then goes past the 9th hour of the day, the animal will be disqualified. It turned 2 right after the 9th hour began. And therefore, anything that was done after the 9th hour is already in the 2nd year of its life. So you have a number of issues here. One is that the tracking of this, which is you have to now track the animals based on the hour they were born during the day. Obviously, they spent a lot more time with their animals, more familiar with them, and had that view as to exactly when they were born. And then they would know exactly what was the sha'ot, and if you didn't know, you couldn't use it. And yes, there still is aging, quote-unquote, of the animal. The time is shechita till zrikat adam, because the animal needs to be benched off all the way until the point of zrikat adam. Lema kitenaye. Let us say this issue as to whether eternal missing evarim are considered to be a mum or not. Let us say that it is a machloket tanaim. Again, it's not, what we said already is that it's not a mum strong enough to lay to shech the animal or to redeem the animal. It's a question of it's a disqualifying item to be put on the mizbeach. So we have the pasuk ma'uch v'katut v'natuk v'karut in Parshat Emor, speaking about the things that disqualify the animal. These are disqualifications in the male reproductive system. Ma'uch is bruised, katut is crushed, natuk is severed, but it's severed completely, but it's still inside of the scrotum. And karut is where it's cut by a knife, but they are still attached to the reproductive system somewhat, and they're still obviously inside of the sac. The reason Rashi has that explanation, we discussed this before, is because the Gemara earlier on says that nituk can happen after karut. Karut is one problem, and then nituk is even a further extension of that problem. So Rashi says here that therefore, if you have karut, karut cannot be severed completely. It means severed, but not severed completely. So that means that the testicles are still somewhat attached to the reproductive system, but they are cut, and they're still inside of the scrotum. If they weren't in the scrotum, then it would be a visible mum, because then you would obviously see it. The fact that they're still in there is what makes it not a visible mum, but could be a chisaron. The natuk is when they're totally severed from the reproductive system, even though they're still in the scrotum. Ma'uch v'kadut are different amounts of the actual testicles being crushed, so whether they're just bruised or they're completely crushed to the point where they are, don't exist there anymore. Kulan bibeitzim divi Rabbi Yehuda. All of these mumim are about the testicles, Rabbi Yehuda says. When it says bibeitzim velo bigid, is that true? They're only about the testicles, not about the member? Ema af bibeitzim divi Rabbi Yehuda. That not only does it apply to the member itself, the gid itself, but it also applies to the beitzim, to the testicles. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, kulan bigid. They're only speaking about the member, they're not speaking about the testicles at all. Yossi Omer, ma'uch v'katut af b'beitzim. The first two, which are the crushing and the dissolving of, are meaningful both by the member and by the beitzim, the testicles. Natuk v'karut is only relevant by the gid, it's not relevant b'gidin b'beitzim lo, by the testicles it's not. My lav b'haka miflegei. You have a three-way machloket here. What is the machloket? The Marsavar Chisaron Bibifnim Shmei Chisaron. Marsavar Lo Shmei Chisaron. Depends on whether you think that an eternal missing object is problematic. Mar says, that's very interesting. Vitisbara, Rabbi Yossi, my Kasavar. The problem is that you have a middle position, and that middle position won't work out in that machloket. It works well for Rabbi Yehuda, who says that everything is problematic both by the member and by the testicles. Then you can say that he thinks that Chisaron Bifnim is considered a Chisaron. And for Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who says it only applies to the member, you can say that he says that a chisaron bifnim is not meaningful, and therefore it has to be the visible part of the reproductive system. But then you have Rabbi Yossi, who splits the difference and says, well, two of them apply to the testicles, as well as the member, and two of them don't apply to the testicles, just to the member. So then how can you say speaking about chisaron bifnim or not chisaron bifnim being an issue? Which one is it? For him, mimonov shach, it's not going to work. Because if he thinks it's a problem, they should also be problematic for the testicles. And if you think it's not problematic, then why are machuk v'katut problematic for the testicles? Their machloket is what is considered to be a visible mum. Now, when you're dealing with the gid or the member, it's clear that there's a visible mumim. The question is, with regards to the testicles, what is considered to be a visible mum? Rabbi Yehuda Savar, ma'uch v'katut have a muma. That ma'uch v'katut are a mum, demikabtsan. Because if that's the case, then the scrotum will shrink and will give evidence of the fact that the testicles are not inside of it. Natuk v'karut avimuva, da'atalya. Natuk and karut will also be obvious because the testicles will be sitting low down in the scrotum because they're detached from the reproductive system. So even though you can't see it, you don't have imagery that's going to show you what's inside, but from looking on the outside, you can tell that there's something wrong over here. The shaping of the scrotum will give you an indication that either they're missing the testicles or the testicles are just sitting at the bottom of the scrotum. They're not really attached. That it's not unusual that the testicles will shrink or the scrotum will shrink. It's actually biologically or physiologically, that's what the body does in order to cool down the semen. The semen only exists in a certain temperature environment where the heat of the body would not allow it to exist. So the scrotum allows the reproductive system to move the semen away from the body to cool it off. Depending on how hot the body is, will determine how far away it hangs from the body. If it's very cold outside, it actually might shrink up. So there are times where naturally it would be shrunk or be closer up. Or the way the Rabbeinu Gershom seems to indicate here, the testicles moved up into the body, and it'll simulate the effect of there being no testicles there. And so without someone with an expert eye, you're not going to be able to tell the difference between whether this is just a natural phenomenon or they're actually missing here. And similarly, when the animal's very hot, then the testicles will hang far away from the body to cool them off. So then you can have that phenomenon even if they're not detached from the reproductive system. So again, without an expert eye, you're not going to be able to tell the difference, and therefore you can't classify that as a mum shibigaloi. Rabbi Yossi Savar, ma'och v'katut avi muma. He says, ma'och v'katut are considered to be a mum, da'a leitnehu, because they're not there. When something's not there, it's obvious that it's not there. There's a difference between something not being there and having the scrotum contract and then the, as Rashi calls it over here, he uses the word retreat, and have the testicles retreat towards the body. So there's a big difference between those, and even someone who's not an expert can tell that difference. Natuk v'karut, lo v'muma da'itnehu. On the other hand, natuk v'karut are not considered to be a mum because they are there. If the testicles are missing completely, even someone without an expert eye can tell that there are no testicles versus a case where the testicles are just shrunk or retreated up towards the body. But in a case where they're severed from the reproductive system, some without an expert eye, it's going to be hard to tell the difference between the fact that there are testicles there, but they're severed, versus there are testicles there, but they're attached and just hanging far away from the body. So that's not something that without an expert eye you can tell, and therefore he thinks those are not considered to be a mum shebigaloi. Rashi says when the Gemara switches over and says, Ela hakab emumim shebigaloi plige, then concludes, the kulei alma chisaron mibifnim shmei chisaron. Gemara has now concluded that everybody thinks that an internal missing haver is problematic, and now we're discussing what the machloket is with regards to these tanaim. If you look on the side in the Masorah Shas, he quotes from the Tzom Kodoshim that the Girsan Rashi should be just the opposite. That kuli alma chisaron bifnim lo shmei chisaron. It's not considered to be a chisaron, and this is what they argue about. The truth is that it could be both. It could be that the Gemara is indecisive about this issue. It doesn't know what their opinions are with regards to chisaron bifnim. It's just indicating that their machloket is about a totally different matter. And in that way, it's not like the Girsa we have in Rashi or the Girsa of the Tzom Kodoshim. It's that the Gemara doesn't have an answer to that because that's not what they're discussing. And therefore, these Tanaim, we don't know what their view is with regards to Chisaron Bifnim. But in that case, we don't have this be a Machloket Tanaim with regards to the question that we posed before as to whether a Chisaron Aver Bifnim is considered to be a mum or a disqualifying event. All right, next Mishnah. Nifkam Hazoven. Over here, it's hard to know what the Zoven is. Rashi explains that the Zoven is Dinartik, Shakis, Chabuibo, and likely the Gerson should be changed to Shagid, Kasuibo. It is some sort of pocket or covering or sack that takes care of the male member. Others say the Zoven is the Gid itself. Well, that's a harder reading over here because we just discussed that in the Gemara, and the Gemara already mentioned that it uses the term Gid and not Zoven. Ohayir Yash on the Keva, or the reproductive area of the female where it was cut or problematic around the reproductive area of the female. Bemukdashim. In case of Mukdashim, obviously the Keva is not relevant by Bechor because Kedushat Bechor only applies to Zecharim. So that's why the Mishnah notes that by Eriyav the Nekeva, That mum is only relevant by muktashim, other areas of hekdesh. Nifkam hazanav mina etzem. If the tail where the bone is has gotten a cut or a crack in it, avalo min haperek, but not along the joint. So if there is a problem with the tail where the bones of the tail are, as long as it's not a cut where the joint is, then it would be a mum or problematic. If it's a cut where the joint is, it's less problematic. Oh, Sharosh is enough. The Girsa and the Mishnayot is Mafzil Ha'etzem. It's Machloket Rashi and Tosfot that explain it. Generally, the word Mefutzal means to be split. Lefatzel means to divide or split. That's how Tosfot reads this, that the tail bone at the end is split. That type of bone split at the end of the tail, that's considered to be a mum. That Tosfot reads it. And it shows that the Lashon of Pitzul throughout Mishnayot is used in that way, which means to split. Rashi, on the other hand, quotes that Mifutzal comes from the word niklaf, to peel off. And therefore he explains that it's a case where the tail end of the tail, where the bone is, was peeled away. The or and the basar, the hide, and the flesh were peeled away until that end of the tailbone is visible. And Rashi says that that does not then cure itself, it does not heal. And he says the word mifatzel comes from Yaakov Avinu, when he pitzel, he peeled the rods that he put into the rehatim, into the troughs, to cause the animals to become impregnated and have animals that were nikudim, tluim, the ones that he could keep, or the ones that were promised to him by Lavan. The word pitzul over there means lifatzel, means niklaf, the kalukolif, to peel off. Tosafot says that Rashi is conflating issues. He's using the word pitzul from the Torah to explain pitzul in the Mishnah. And he says, Lashon Torah, Lashon Mishnah Levad. In the Torah, that might be what it means. But in the Mishnah, they don't use it that way. In the Mishnah, it was a niklaf to explain something that's peeled. And therefore, the word pitzul here means to be split. According to Rashi, the issue is the case where the skin and the flesh are taken away from the end of the tailbone and the tailbone is exposed. If that happens, it does not heal. According to the Baal Tosafot, it's a case where you have a bone split at the end of the tail. That's something that does not heal. That is a mum kavua. Other items that we mentioned were if there was a cut in the tail. So what the Mishnah is telling us that if there's a cut in the tail along the area of the bone, it does not heal. If it's in the area in the joints of the bones in the tail, then that area does heal. Or sheyesh basar mechulia lechulia below etzba. If there's an etzba worth of basar between the bones or the tail, here they use the word chulia because of vertebrae, but that's because the spinal column continues all the way down until the pelvis bone, and then it continues beyond that, but that really is considered to be the tail. The Gemara just calls those the chuliot, the vertebrae that keep going past the pelvis, but they're really the tail bones, and they call them the chuliot. So if in between the tail bones there is a etzba worth of basar that's there, that's also a mum and something that will not rectify itself or cure itself, and that's why it's considered a mum. Amar Rabbi Lazar, nifgam velo nital. The Mishnah specifies that the zoven, whether that's the member or whether that's the sack of the member, the covering of the member, if it's nifgam, if it's cracked, cut, then it's problematic. Nital, if it's taken entirely, it's not problematic. Kis velo zichrut. Pgam is only if the covering is nifgam, but not if the member was nifgam, because if the member, the gid, was nifgam, it would heal itself. So that's why it favors heavily the way Rashi explained the Mishnah, because over here there's a differentiation between the kis and the zichrut. Tanya nami ochi, we have a braita that's supportive of this contention. Nifgam velo nital. It's only true if it has a pgam in it, not if it was actually removed completely. Kis velo zichrut. It's the covering and not the member itself. Amar Rav Yosef ben Meshulam. Rav Yosef ben Meshulam, when we saw just a couple of daf ago. Maseh be'inbal. Over here again, there's some question about the girsa, but if you look in the Shita Mekubetzet, the way that he reads it, it turns out to be an identification of a place. Be'in bul. The name of the place where this incident took place. Had you kept it as the word be'inbal, it might have been a synonym to this zoven that's mentioned in the Mishnah. And then it would be evidence again of what we're saying here. Should not know, Zev, that a wolf bit it off or took it, and then it healed and returned. So over here you have a difference between something that's cut or somehow damaged, it won't heal itself. But if it's taken away completely, it will regrow and cure itself. That's what the Gemara is pointing out here. Nital is not a problem. It's only if nifgam that it is a problem. Now, if it was nifgam and then nital, it's not clear here from the Gemara whether that would cure itself or not. Does nifgam ruin it to the point where not only will it not cure the nifgam, but that if it was nital after that, it also would not cure itself? Or is it no matter what, when it's nital, it can grow back, it can regenerate? If it's nifgam, it won't regenerate, but even if it was nifgam first, still nital would regenerate. It's not clear from the Gemara which of those is true. But either way, what we're pointing out is evidence to this fact that pagam is the problem and not nital. And we have a case by which when it was taken, it regrew or regenerated. Nifgama zanav min ha'etzem. Tana etzba shamru echad mi'arba'a batefach shel kol adam. The etzba that we're speaking about over here is 1 out of 4 in normal people. The ma yochoto. What is the halacha? Why is this a relevant halacha about what size etzba? The reference here in the Gemara is to a Gemara in Menachot. The Gemara in Menachot over there explains that a tefach, which is a fist worth, is comprised of etzvaot. We have an ama, and an ama breaks down into tefachim. The ama is from the tip of the finger until the elbow. That's the ama. The tefach is the fist itself. Etzvaot are the fingers. Question is, how many fingers are there in a fist? You have different sized fingers. And so then how many etzvaot comprise a fistful or a tefach? Come over there, it says 4, 5, and 6. So you could have 4 etzvot, 5 etzvot, and 6 etzvot that comprise a tefach. But it says, depends which finger you're using. If you're using the gudal, the thumb, then it's 4 thumbs make up a tefach. If you're using the pinky, the small finger, then 6 of them make up a tefach. If you're using the etzva, if you're using a regular finger, 5 of them make up the tefach. So now, what the Gemara is saying over here is, etzva that we're speaking about here, what is the etzva? Is it the etzva that is 1 out of 4 of a tefach? Is it an etzva that's 1 out of 5 of a tefach? An etzva that's 1 out of 6? So that's what the statement is, it's the 1 out of 4. Which means it's the size of a gudal, a thumb. So when we say there's an etzva, stam etzva and shas, means the width of a thumb. Now the Gemara wants to know, the mayuchata. Where does the halacha of etzva come up that you need to know that it's the width of a thumb? The Gemara brings the first case. Amarabo, linyan techelet. For tzitzit, the Tanya, kamo chutim unotein. How many strings do you put in the tzitzit? Beit Shammai omrim arba'a, 4. Beit Hillel omrim shlosha, 3. So now, this is a machloket that we've seen in the Gemara Machot. It's a machloket in the Midrashei Halacha. And we pass on like Beit Shammai that it's 4. Tosafot is uncertain as to what the 4 number means over here. Does it mean 4 strings that then when you double them over, they equal 8 strings? Or does it mean 4 strings that were 2 that were doubled over that equal 4 strings? Now he says, the truth is, from Beit Hillel, it should give us some evidence of that. Because by Beit Hillel, you don't have a choice. Beit Hillel has to mean 3 strings. Because you can't have 1.5 strings that equals 3. It has to be that they're putting in 3 strings that are going to be 6. Because otherwise you can't get to the 3 by putting in half the number of strings. So from that it would indicate that Beit Shammai is saying over here that it's 4 strings that are going to be 8. Although Tosfot is still somewhat uncertain as to what it means. And Tosfot says that that is then a question as to what tzitzit that we wear. Are we wearing white strings in our tzitzit to remember the white strings that they wore? Are we wearing white strings in our tzitzit to remember both the tchelet and the lavan? And that would be the difference. If you only have 4 strings in total, means 2 doubled over, then what Beit Shammai is saying is you're putting in the lavan of the tchelet. And we know the Mishnah in Menachot says that tchelet enu me'akevet the lavan, the lavan enu me'akevet the tchelet. They're not me'akev each other. So what we do is we put in 4 strings, 2 strings that double into 4, and that's the white strings. We just don't put in the tchelet. Or is Beit Shammai saying, you put in 4 strings that double into 8, and we're going to use white strings for the white strings, and we're going to also have white strings that represent the tchelet strings that were in the tzitzit. And thereby you'll have 8 strings, similar to what they had in the time of the tchelet. You have 8 strings, and the lavan represents the lavan. And then Tosfot speaks about a nafkamita then, certain halachot that only apply to tchelet or lavan strings, whether it applies to these strings. If you say that they're only the lavan strings, then it may not apply, because it's a din in tchelet, it's not a din in the lavan. If you think there are 8 strings, and some of the white strings represent the tchelet, maybe those strings do have this din. It would make a difference, halachically, how you view the strings that are there, if there are only four strings in total, or if there are eight strings in total. Tosfot goes back and forth discussing this issue. It happens to be not relevant to our Gemara, but very interesting, about understanding the development of tzitzit, the view of tzitzit, and the view in the Rishonim of tzitzit, as to what is the relationship between the Lavan and the Tchelet. Tosfot over here makes a point that he makes in the Gemara in Menachot heavily, which is he believes that there is a equality between Tchelet and Lavan. Whatever is true of the Lavan must be true of the Tchelet. So if you tell me you need four Lavan, that means you need four Tchelet. And Tosfot is of the view there that you have equal number of Tchelet strings that you have of Lavan strings. For other Rishonim, see Tchelet either being one string, half a string. Not everybody agrees that the Tchelet is equal to Lavan. The Balei Tosafot, over and over again in Menachot, make it clear that they think that there's equality between Lavan and Tchelet, and therefore they believe that you have four strings of Lavan, four strings of Tchelet, and over here they're making the same point, which is that if I have only four strings in total, it's just the Lavan. If I have eight strings, then I have the Lavan and Tchelet, which means that they think that the Tchelet and the Lavan are equal number of strings, and Tosafot makes that point here as well. Kamatei Mishul Shelet. How much should it be? Mishul Shelet, I'm not going to translate the word, because we're going to have three different explanations of this. Mishamayim Omrim Arba'a, it has to be four. Beit Hillel Omrim Shlosha, it has to be three. Ushlish Shebeit Hillel Omrim Echad Me'arba'a B'tefach, Shokol Adam. And the three that Beit Hillel is speaking about is four of these fingers represent a tefach, which is the thumb, the gudal. You need three, means three thumbs widths worth of it. That's what they're saying, Beit Hillel, as opposed to Beit Shammai, who says four, that the Gemara doesn't define it. Now, what this Mishul Shelet is, Rashi says, Tluya lamata miknafa beget. It's hanging down from the beget. Shereinu dimota b'sfata beget mamash. You don't put the hole and the tzitzit right at the edge of the beget. You put it further up in the beget. Elmavinoto shalosha etzbaot. It should be shalosh. Shalosh etzbaot b'tocha beget. You move it up three etzbaot into the beget. Now, Rashi seems to indicate that that's the amount that you have to have it away from the edge of the beget, which is somewhat difficult, as the Balei Tosafot will point out, because we only find that measurement of shlosh betzot away from the corner as the maximum that the tzitzit can be away from the corner, not the location where you should put it, or the minimum amount you should put it away. So from Tosafot's explanation of Rashi, you see that he thinks that Rashi is telling you how far into the beget do you think you put the hole. And Rashi said, Shlosh Etzbaot, and Tosafot says, I don't know what you're talking about. That's the maximum. That's not a minimum, or that's not proper shiur. Rashi himself, you could read to mean that he's speaking about how far away from the Sfata Beget does the first knot need to be. It's, you see, when you knot them from the point of the hole down to the first knot, how far away from the Beget does it need to hang? That could be what Rashi is saying over here. Tosafot then brings two other possibilities. Rashi brings the second possibility of what Mishlesh is, and Tosafot quotes it as being the following. How much do you need of the part of the tzitzit that are twined, wrapped, knotted, versus the anaf, which is the free flowing strings? Beit Shammai says it's four etzbot. Beit Hillel says that it's three etzbot. And Tosafot says, well then, Hidur Mitzvah would be the following. Shlish Gedil, Obeit Shlish Te'anah. One third should be knotted, and two thirds should be open strings. That's the relationship you have. So then, if you believe the Gedil, like Beit Shammai, is four etzbaot, that means that the Anaf, the free string, should be eight etzbaot. And that together would be a total of 12 etzbaot. But and then he says, but Rashi then brings in Techelet, how much of the free strings do you need to have besides the gdil? And then this would be defined as arba etzbot, and that would mean then that a mehudar tzitzit would be six etzbot. Because we know the relationship between the gdil, the knotted part, and the free strings is one third knotted, two thirds free hanging strings. If you define that the four etzbot is measuring the gdil part, the knotted part, then that means the knotted part's four, the free strings are eight, total of 12. Then if you think that this is defining the free string part is four etzvot, that means the gedil is two etzvot, and that means six etzvot is the mehudar tzitzit. So Tosafot brings two other possibilities as to what Mishul Shelet is. One of them, as Rashi explains in his second interpretation, that it is the dilim, the part where it's knotted and wrapped. That's how big it is. Rashi Menachot brings in its possibility that it's speaking about the anaf, the free strings. And Rashi over here seems to indicate it has to do with the distance either of the hole away from the edge of the beged or the distance of the knot from where you put the tzitzit by the sfat beged. So that's one possibility as to where this halacha is relevant, which is that the three that we're mentioning over here mean three gudalim, three etzba'ot of gudalim. That's the measurement that Beit Hillel is giving, and that's where it has halachic ramifications. V'hunibrit v'shuamar, the shtei amot. It has to do with the two amot of the Bureau of Weights and Measurements, the Tanan. We have a Mishnah, shtei amot, hayu b'shushan abira. Shushan abira is not the capital city, like in the Megillah, but Shushan HaBira was actually a gateway onto Har HaBayit on the eastern side, which was the primary entrance into the Mikdash. Over there, they had made a mural of Shushan HaBira for, the Gemara says, one of two possibilities. It was either to remember the fact that Hashem brought them back from the Galut of Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and it was more of a thank you. Others say that it was a tribute to the king of Persia, who gave their permission to go back and build it, Koresh, Dayovesh, who permitted them to build the Beit HaMikdash, but a reminder as to who their sponsors were, that it wasn't just that they were autonomous, they were still under the Persian rule, and that's why it was called Shushan HaBira. In the chambers above there, there is Achat al-Keren Mizrachit Tzvonit, on the northeastern, meaning the gates on the eastern side, so the north side of the chamber on the eastern side, Achat al-Keren Mizrachit Tzvonit. And one of them on the southeastern side of that chamber, Sha'al Keren Mizrachit Tzvonit, the one that was on the northeastern side, Aita Yiterao Shemoshe Chatzi Etzba, was half an etzba bigger than that of Moshe Rabbeinu's Tefach. Sha'al Keren Mizrachit Tzvonit, and the one on the southeastern side, Aita Yiterao Lea, was greater than the first one, Chatzi Etzba, half an etzba, Nimtzeit Yiterao Shemoshe Etzba. That makes it in totality that one on the southeastern side is one etzba greater than the tefach of Moshe Rabbeinu. V'lama hayu achat gedola v'achat ketana. So why do they have one big one and one small one? Because shayu omanim notlim biktana. When they took it with the small one. Umachzirin, when they return it, big gedola. They do with the big one. You had the tefach of Moshe Rabbeinu, which the mission never mentions, but the assumption is that there is a tefach of Moshe Rabbeinu there. Then you have one on the northern side, which is a half an etzba bigger, and one on the southern side that's a full etzba bigger than that of Moshe. So when craftsmen worked for the Mikdash, in order to avoid any problems of Me'ilah, of them misappropriating Hekdesh money or cheating Hekdesh in any way, they made it that when they purchased or took things or promised things to Hekdesh, it was measured by the Tefach of Moshe Rabbeinu. When they returned things to the Mikdash or to Hekdesh, they had to return it with Moshe's tefach plus a chatzi etzba. In that way, they were always sure they were overcompensating towards Hekdesh, so there would be no mi'ilah or no chashash mi'ilah, so they were giving a little bonus to Hekdesh in their dealings with Beretim Hekdesh. Problem is, tarte lamali. Why do I need two of them? I understand why you need something bigger than the tefach of Moshe, but why do I need one that's chatzi etzba and one that's a full etzba bigger than that of Moshe Rabbeinu? Chadah the kasb of zabo depends on the materials. By precious materials like gold and silver, there they only used chatzi etzba because it would be expensive if they had to give over 25% more to the Mikdash. If you tell me that a tefach is made up of four etzbaot, four gudalim, four thumbs, and you're adding on a chatzi etzba, then that, again, is 12.5% over. If you then give a full gudal over that, that's 25% extra. When you do it with gold and silver, that's a significant amount. Be'achada be'binyona. And dealing with more coarse materials like stone and building materials, over there to give a full etzba more was not as significant, and therefore that's what they did there. That's our second option as to where there's enough kamina about an etzba, which is that measurement in the Mishka of Shushan HaBira was one etzba greater than the tefach of Moshe Rabbeinu. How much is the etzba? A gudal, where four of them comprise a tefach. And the last one is, why it's brought over here, Nachma Yitzchak v'itema Rav Huna bar Natan, lota shaninu. We need it for what's mentioned in our Mishnah, sheish basar ben chulia l'chulia melo etzba. The amount of flesh that's in between the bones that disqualifies it, makes it into a mole, is when there is an etzba's worth, and that etzba is measured by four of them in a tefach, one of those etzvot, which means a thumb's width worth, and that's where this statement about it being four and a tefach is relevant to the etzvot. We have three places in Shas where etzvot are mentioned, and in all those cases, the Gemara indicates that it's speaking about a gudal worth of an etzvah, and that's why it's brought in our Gemara, is because it relates to our Mishnah where it mentions the word etzvah. Okay, we'll stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Mem Amud Aleph.